Today on the broadcast, is the DHS finally waking up as 900 pounds of fentanyl is seized in just 1 week?
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your calls too, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. It's called Operation Blue Lotus, and it is finally a move by the Biden administration to start taking on the fentanyl crisis, the fentanyl that is flooding the U.S. southern border, emanating in China, then going to the cartels in Mexico, and then coming up through our southern border and killing Americans, in a sense, killing more Americans than any act of terrorism like multiple times a year. It's like having multiple 9/11s every single month in the United States of America because of this drug. On top of that, remember yesterday I talked about how there's DEA, Logan, warned about zombie fentanyl being found in 48 out of 50 states. That fentanyl is laced with another drug that is supposed to be used for large animals.
Yep.
And it actually eats human flesh.
Right.
I mean, that is what the DEA said. So this is what's on the street. In 48 of 50 U.S. states, it has been found already.
Yeah, so actually putting something to work in 1 week finds nine. That's only what got seized. Of course, I'm sure things get made it through. 900 pounds of fentanyl makes its way in, or makes its way to the Border Patrol. We stop it. So somewhat, this is actually, for the first time in a very long time, it seems like someone is taking all of this a little bit more serious. And again, Operation Blue Lotus is what it's called. And so far, at least has had some success. You brought up zombie fentanyl. That is something that is horrifying to hear about. The idea of something even worse, a flesh-eating version of this, is just insane. But again, this is 900 pounds that was just stopped. So the amount that actually is making its way in is needs to always be on the front of people's minds is incredibly alarming.
And Logan, I want to say this. I don't think we would have this moment where this would be announced by Secretary Mayorkas if we hadn't kept pounding the table on fentanyl.
Agreed.
And we did. Because all of us, I know everybody I'm talking to right now, is connected to somebody who has died, whether it's a family member or a loved one or a friend, because of fentanyl. Yeah. And whether it was intentional or unintentional, we know too many people, too many Americans we're all tied to who died because of this horrendous drug being manufactured cheaply by the Chinese Communist Party, sent to the cartels in Mexico, and then flooding the United States. So because it's an American issue, and not a partisan issue, it shouldn't be a partisan issue, finally, the Biden administration, Logan, finally, yes, they put together a U.S. Customs and Border Protection and U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So CBP and ICE and Homeland Security Investigations are now working with both federal, state, tribal, and local partners to investigate and put in additional personnel and technology to stop the flow of fentanyl at our southern border. Is it 100% perfect? No. Why? Because we could also build a border wall to really prevent this. But Logan, they could not do they couldn't stop.
Right.
They couldn't ignore it anymore. They had to do something more than just talk about it.
Yeah, it became a political issue, and everyone, hopefully on both sides, but at least on the conservative side, said, no, this is not a partisan political issue. This is the biggest crisis we have happening in our country, and we have to do something about it. Thankfully, and you know what also shows? That there are some good people who do really good job when you give them the opportunity to, when you give them the equipment and you give them the ability to actually do their job. So there are people at the DHS who are actually down there, who are on the border, who really, if they weren't being handcuffed, could really do amazing work.
If you got CBP and ICE unhandcuffed and got them some more agents, we'd be able to stop the fentanyl crisis in our country. This may be a good first step, but let's encourage more. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. A former Secretary of State, former CIA Director Mike Pompeo joining us next on this very issue. This first step in the Biden administration finally combating deadly fentanyl. Welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your calls, your comments at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I'm in Washington, D.C. Logan's our studios in Nashville and our broadcasting office is there. A lot of work going on here. I'll update you more about that later in the broadcast. But we're joined now by our Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, the former Secretary of State and CIA Director and Member of Congress, Secretary Mike Pompeo. Secretary Pompeo, I want to jump right into this issue. The DHS has finally announced a new program. It's called Operation Blue Lotus. This is the department's first effort that we know of to directly focus on to stopping the flow of fentanyl across the border. And they're already touting that since they began this, just this week, they've seized 900 pounds of fentanyl. We know there's a lot more getting across the border. Is it at least the administration finally listening to just the American people, not just Republicans, the American people who say, we want you to get this under control at the border so fentanyl stops killing our sons, our daughters, our parents, and our kids?
Jordan, I pray that it's so. It's a good sign. I'm happy to hear that they have an operation design focused on this scourge. That it's not, this isn't Republican or Democrat, like you said. It's killing kids all across this country. They have ignored it for too long, just in the same way they've ignored the illegal immigration across our southern border. I hope that this is not only a response to what they're hearing from the American people, but something that the administration has truly taken on board as an American priority. Resourced properly, the United States can reduce the amount of fentanyl that makes its way from China into Mexico, cooked, chemicalized, brought into our country. We can do this. It's not a mission impossible. I pray that the Biden administration isn't just going to announce this and have a big press conference, but rather seriously focus on this in the weeks and months ahead.
You know, we know Secretary Pompeo that in 2022, it hurts to say it, but it's true. Enough fentanyl was seized to kill every American. That was just in 2022. Enough fentanyl was seized at the southern border to kill every American. And now we know there's been more seized, so you could kill every American like 10 times over. So the question probably I know our audience already has, and I'm seeing it in the chats on places like Rumble, Secretary Pompeo, is do you think it's too little too late, or is it never too little too late to start combating this kind of drug scourge?
Well, I'm worried about it being too little, but it's never too late. This is a serious requirement. You have to get this right. I do worry, like it sounds like some of your viewers, listeners are worried. I'm worried that they're not going to apply the actual resources required, that they won't do the work to actually secure the southern border in a way that can have the impact that the scale of this problem demands. And so we should never give up. We should never claim it's too late, but we can all focus on the fact that the Biden administration needs to take seriously the need to shut off this supply chain from China. The Chinese Communist Party is doing this with great intention. The cartels are making a fortune off of this, and we can stop both of those things.
You know, we uncovered Secretary Pompeo via FOIA, and we just got it out yesterday to our folks, that the DHS and FBI were trying to cover up the dangerous realities at the border when they removed a press release that they had already put up online. So once you do that, you can try to remove it, but it's there for history. About two Yemeni men on the terror watch list who were captured by Border Patrol in 2021. Interestingly enough there, the local FBI office in San Diego approved CBP putting this up. But then a person, again, Marcia Espinoza, who was at CBP at the time and is now the principal advisor to Secretary Mayorkas, got into a back and forth. We found out through our FOIA, her name was not redacted, to basically do exactly what the seventh floor at the FBI wanted, even though it would make CBP look kind of foolish if they posted this and then had to remove it down. Kind of what they said is the horse is already out of the barn. But how important is it for the ACLJ to keep it exposing, pushing up these cover-ups? And now that we've got allies on Capitol Hill, I think about Comer and Jim Jordan, that we can take this information to and say, here's the name, here's the person to call before and testify before your committee.
The ACLJ has done remarkable work on this front and all these issues along the border, the fentanyl issue, and now this issue where we know that there are dozens of folks who are on the American watch list, the American terror watch list, who've been detained in Texas and along the border. There's an enormous amount of risk that someone will just wander their way through, supported by the cartels, and we'll have terrorism back inside the United States in ways that doesn't have to be. And so whether it's this particular issue surrounding the fact that they're clearly embarrassed by this and tried to take it down, and frankly, Jordan, do what the Biden administration often does is say, you know, nothing to see here, folks. No, there's something to see here. The ACLJ should stay on it. Your listeners, your viewers should continue to pursue this with their members of Congress as well. We got to get to the bottom of it.
Absolutely. And Secretary Paio, this is Logan. I just wanted to say there's been a lot of moves going on, just to change topics a little bit, and I had to get your point of view on this. Obviously, we saw a meeting happen this week between Putin and President Xi. And if there's someone who's worked with both of these people, you know, I thought maybe you'd have some thoughts on this. So I want to know your take on this summit that's going on.
Well, it's clear two things. One, it's clear that the Biden administration has failed to do the hard work to keep the Chinese and the Russians apart. We now have the Chinese apparently sending lethal aid into Ukraine, something that the Biden administration said they would not permit to happen. So another red line drawn, another red line crossed. Second, it's also pretty clear that that Vladimir Putin is in such a predicament that he is going to be the second fiddle in that band and the junior partner in the agreement. And so while that's the case, and it is indeed a shotgun marriage, they're now wedded in ways they were not wedded before. And that presents risk to every American. We need to understand that the confrontation in Ukraine has deep implications for the threat that the Chinese Communist Party poses to each of us as well.
Go ahead, Logan.
So it seems pretty clear that China is going to try to come out to be the savior in this and be the one who ends the war and walk away as an even bigger power than they are. And that just feels like almost the inevitability, Secretary Pompeo.
The deal that the Chinese Communist Party is offering is basically Putin's deal. That is unlikely to go anyplace. It is certainly their effort to look like they're the global power, the global peacemaker. They did that between the Iranians and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia as well. They are bad actors in every one of these, looking out only for their increasing power, their increasing hegemony. They care nothing for American interests, and we should always be aware of that.
I wanted to go right to that Iran and Saudi Arabia relationship, that unprecedented move by China, brokering what is so upsetting to me because of the work that you all did in the administration that we were backing at ACLJ to really build a strong relationship between Gulf states and the United States and Gulf states and Israel and working together against a common enemy that we all share, including the United States, Iran. And then China moves in and is starting to broker a normalized relationship between Iran and serious enemies, Iran and Saudi Arabia. So how dangerous is this for our ally Israel? And was this because the Biden administration just threw the Abraham Accords out the door?
Jordan, it's absolutely the case that the Iranians feel emboldened as a result of the fact that the United States was sitting at the table across from them negotiating a deal with them, trying to let them out of the incredible pressure that they were feeling. And so when that happens, the Israelis are more at risk. Our friends in Israel are more at risk. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, the Kuwaitis, the Omanis, they're all more at risk too. And so, Jordan, it shouldn't surprise anyone that they are trying to hedge their bets, trying to find a way to, you know, cut some kind of understanding with the Iranians to reduce risk to their own people when they have no confidence that the United States of America will do the right thing and support them, provide them what they need to keep themselves and their people safe. And if you're the leader today in Israel, you have to wonder if the Iranians continue to move down a path towards a nuclear weapon, will the Americans actually do the things we need to do to help them prevent that from happening? They have upended all of the stability, all the prosperity that we had begun to build across the Middle East. This is not good for the Gulf states. It's not good for Israel. And it's certainly not good for the United States of America.
Secretary Pompeo, as always, we appreciate your insight on all these issues, from fentanyl to China and Russia to Iran and Saudi Arabia. We're so grateful to have you as part of our team and appreciate you joining us today and throughout the broadcast during each week. And folks, again, Logan, I think it's a great reminder for people when we face these kind of issues, whether it's the fentanyl border issue, whether it's China, and Russia, whether it's Iran, Saudi Arabia being brokered by China, we have the best experts available to tell you exactly what's going on.
That without your support. Right now, we're in the tail end, starting to wrap up. I can't believe we're almost to the end of March. Wrap up this matching challenge. We only have a few days left to give a donation, so why don't you do it today? Go to aclj.org if you're able to. Give a donation. Any donation made is effectively doubled. So $10 becomes $20, and so on and so on. And that is the backbone of this organization. You hear about this incredible work that we're doing. You hear all these incredible voices. We could not do it without you. And most of those people that donate aren't $1,000 donors, $2,000 donors. Most of them are $25 to $50 donors. And hopefully you can be one of those as well today. Coming up next on the broadcast, we're going to be joined by Majority Floor Leader John Eccles from Oklahoma on a pro-life move that I think you're going to find pretty interesting. So stay tuned for that coming up in the next segment. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you on the air. Give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
All right, folks, welcome back to Secu. I wanted to update you on an important battle for life. And we did some of this throughout the broadcast this week, but this was a major, again, I think it's a victory. Now, again, in these victories, there's things you get almost all the way. So you don't always get exactly what you want because these go before courts. But we're joined now by the Oklahoma House Majority Floor Leader, John Eccles. He put together 41 members of the Oklahoma House and Senate, including the State House Majority Floor Leader John Eccles, so that we were able to file an amicus brief representing those House and Senate members in Oklahoma. Leader Eccles, tell people about what the court decision did yesterday.
Well, first, thank you so much for having me on today again, and thank you so much for the work we did on the brief. I almost feel bad taking any credit for it. That was your legal team that did a great job getting everybody together. But what the listeners need to know is the Oklahoma Supreme Court, for the first time in the history of this state, found a right to abortion inside the Oklahoma Constitution. It's a very concerning decision.
So they find a right to abortion, but they also uphold a provision that says that there can be a criminal ban on abortion unless it's necessary to preserve the life. They didn't add the health exceptions. They didn't kind of use the language that gets it kind of broadens it out and almost makes those bans irrelevant. So there is a victory kind of inside of this. While I get your concern that they're even recognizing a right at all as a court, there was a victory inside of that recognition.
That's exactly right. And part of that victory was from the work the ACLJ has done inside specifically Oklahoma, and you've done in a lot of other states, is making sure we don't expand that type of judicial activism. There is still going to be a fight inside the state of Oklahoma that this ruling is limited, and it is a large victory. As you know, we have most of the abortions don't qualify for the life of the mother exception. And frankly, I'm for the life of the mother exception. I disagree strongly with the court that there wasn't already a life of the mother exception. The part that is concerning inside this case is I think the law already had one, and they found that right. But it also goes to show the work you're doing, and I'm so grateful for it, inside the states. The fight in this is fully in the state.
No, it is. I mean, Leader Eccles, and I want to go to CeCe Howell on this too, who leads a lot of our pro-life work on our legal team, and we've seen it in the states, CeCe. This is, I was at a pre- beginning of the day meeting here in Washington, D.C. on an effort, the effort in Ohio, which is the next ballot effort. And that is a one that's going to be on the ballot that Planned Parenthood is putting on the ballot to get a yes vote to try and put, again, the constitutional right to abortion inside Ohio. CeCe, as Leader Eccles said, because of overturning Roe versus Wade, we know at the ACLJ and through ACLJ action, these battles now are going to be fought state to state and even some cases city to city and town to town.
Absolutely. And we're involved in every one of those fights in the town level and at the state level. And in this ruling, you know, it's critical to say that preserve the life of the mother. What we always see is that a lot of times that language is broadly interpreted. And I think the court actually identified that you cannot broadly interpret that because they said the mere possibility or speculation of the abortion necessity is insufficient to rise to that level. So, you know, I think there is a win to be had there that the abortion right that they found is a very limited right and only to preserve the life of the mother. And I agree with Leader Eccles that exemption was already there, of course, to preserve the life of the mother. If you have two lives and the doctor can only, you know, preserve one, he's going to preserve the life of the mother. But I think, although it is disappointing that a technical right to abortion was found here, it is also a win because it's very, very limited and it's not going to be broadly interpreted.
You know, Leader Eccles, we're proud to work with you and members of the House and Senate in Oklahoma. What comes next legislatively on this fight? Are you all planning more work on life?
We absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was in Washington, D.C. just last week, and I appreciated Ben Sisney taking me around the ACLJ office. And we talked a lot about what we have going on with the ACLJ inside the state of Oklahoma. What our next steps are going to be, continuing to make sure this is narrowly defined, as CC said, and then we're working towards life in all areas. For example, we're working with the ACLJ in Oklahoma to extend the child tax credit to include children inside the womb. These are the types of things that the next generation of life, because we know as conservatives, what we care about at the end of the day is all life. It's abortion. We are anti-abortion because life is meaningful. Life is precious. Life is created in the image of God. And it all has value. And I'm very excited to get to work. And we talked CC a lot with Ben when I was up in D.C. about what you guys are doing, really being the tip of the spear in this fight, taking it to the state levels.
Yeah, and we're happy to do that, and we're happy to partner with folks like you, Leader Eccles. I will say, I came out of a meeting probably similar to the one you had here, but it was with a group, and this was focusing in on what's going on in Ohio, another deeply red state, pretty pro-life state, and a ballot amendment put forward by Planned Parenthood and their allies at the ACLU to try to basically have abortion with no restrictions at all, but they're not going to sell it that way. We all know through these recent ballot initiatives, that's not how they're taking it to the voters. But what we have seen through these efforts is a lot more creativity. Like you mentioned, that child tax credit applying to children who are inside the womb. There was a senator, a U.S. senator at a meeting today who said, you know, one of the things they're looking at in Ohio is that because Planned Parenthood says, you know, it's very expensive, and if you need a specialist doctor while you're having birth, and that person then isn't covered by your insurance, you could get a $15,000 bill, which would wipe out a lot of people, I mean, bankrupt some people. So I think we all have to say there's new ways we have to engage this battle to protect human life.
That's exactly right, and we're engaging those on the state level right now to protect human life at all levels, and to encourage people to choose life. I was the author in the state of Oklahoma of the Choosing Life Credit, where we provided funding to our crisis pregnancy centers to help women that choose life, that choose to give birth. And it's for the reasons we said. We have to define ourselves in the pro-life community as people who are not just anti-abortion, but are pro-life under all circumstances and why. And we're very thankful. I do keep going back to it, but what you guys have set up with your messaging arm is making a difference in states like ours and states like Ohio's.
I appreciate so much. Again, we were talking to the Oklahoma House Majority Floor Leader, John Eccles. We represented him, a number of his colleagues in the House and Senate in Oklahoma here in this case. And it was still a big win for life. We'll continue fighting with you, Leader Eccles, and appreciate you joining the broadcast today.
Thanks for having me on. It's always an honor, and thanks for all you do.
Thanks, Leader Eccles. And Logan, again, another reminder for all of our supporters out there about just how much work goes into every single one of these issues. Not just the case. Then it's the legislation. And it's not just in Oklahoma. That's the good example today because we had Leader Eccles. But I'm up here in a meeting, a pre-meeting before the day even began, on what's going on in Ohio, trying to get ahead of that. And people are asking us to come. They're saying, we need ACLJ. We need your insight. How do we beat Planned Parenthood, who has teamed up with the ACLU?
Absolutely no cost by going to ACLJ.org. Click that help button if you need it. But to do that at no cost, we need support. We need that through you, the ACLJ supporters. We got a second half hour coming up. But as you wait, go to ACLJ.org. Visit, donate, support the work of the ACLJ. Second half hour coming up. If you don't get it on your local radio broadcast, find us live right now on ACLJ.org.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever, this is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
You know, folks, we do this broadcast live at noon Eastern time, so there is breaking news that we do cover. And if you have been waiting for whether or not there will be an indictment, not an arrest, because we know that would come at least a week from now, but an indictment of Donald Trump, it will not be today, Logan. That is because it just broke in the news that the New York grand jury has been told that they will not be meeting today. So they will not be making any decisions about issuing any indictment. So everybody was looking towards Wednesday. Is there going to be an indictment? Not an arrest, but an indictment. That is not happening today.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting, move, as every time it feels like we're on the cusp, it all changes. And that's sometimes based on what I feel like what President Trump says or what happens. It's almost like if he says it's going to happen on Tuesday, then they're going to bump into Wednesday. He goes, what's going to happen on Wednesday? Now we're going to bump it to next week. I think you're going to kind of see this cat and mouse thing happen. And, you know, it's politically motivated. We know it's politically motivated. So when is the best time to break the news for it to happen and to help benefit the other side? I always think that there's always those motives happening.
Yeah, I mean, the grand jury's not done. They didn't, like, dismiss the grand jury, so they didn't say, we have no indictments to issue. It's not like they've announced that, because I want to make that clear. They did not announce that Donald Trump's not going to be indicted. Right. They just did not sit today as a grand jury. Bizarre. I have no idea. It just broke what the reasoning was behind that, except for maybe, Logan, and then we're going to get to other issues, too, including economic issues, banking issues as well, unless maybe they're just getting nervous about what the indictment actually might be doing politically for Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. I'd love to hear your thoughts. 1-800-684-3110. I wish you had a pretty jam-packed first half hour. I haven't had time to take your calls yet, but now will be a good time at 1-800-684-3110 as sort of news breaks as we are live. If you are new to the broadcast, if you're watching this on our many social media platforms, specifically if you're on Rumble, or one of those that you can hit subscribe or follow, I encourage you to do that. So if you're on Rumble right now, hit follow. If you're on YouTube, hit subscribe. We do this broadcast each and every day at noon Eastern, as Jordan said. So if news breaks, we cover it. And we also make a lot of news. It's something that we do here at the ACLJ. And you've seen that now for the last half hour and specifically on yesterday's broadcast. And obviously, we're seeing more movements in that with all of the fentanyl seizures that happened. If you just are joining us now, you maybe saw that. It's the title. Maybe, Jordan, we should give a little bit of a recap on that, which is a new Operation Blue Lotus, which is maybe a positive move by the DHS and by Border to actually start doing something about this crisis that we've all been screaming about, I feel like, for the last couple of years.
They're putting more Border Patrol agents, more ICE agents, more technology to stop the flow of fentanyl from the southern border that is killing American people en masse. We already know there's enough fentanyl inside the United States right now to kill every single American 10 times. Every single American 10 times. And yet this fentanyl is still coming over, and the new stuff is even getting worse. And the reason why I always talk, almost every show I bring fentanyl up, because I know I'm talking to an audience, including my family, who's been affected by it, who's lost loved ones in your family because of fentanyl. People who should still be here today, but because of fentanyl that was manufactured in China and brought through Mexican cartels, aren't. And that's an American issue. It's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. It's an American issue. And Logan, finally, I don't know if it's enough, but at least the Biden administration realized they couldn't just keep their head in the sand. They had to fight back.
Yeah, it's not going to bring back those loved ones, but at least we're going to try to help other families who are going to go through this crisis and actually be Americans for once and not just be political hacks, which is nice. Nice to actually see finally one issue maybe finally breaking outside of the political spectrum. And for a long time, it wasn't. A long time it wasn't. The border, it's the border. So the border is a issue that is Republican or Democrat. But this is so beyond that.
Yeah, because fentanyl doesn't care where you live. It doesn't matter if you live in a Democrat neighborhood, a Republican district, or a blue state or a red state. Yep. It kills you the same way. So at least there is some move there. They finally realized they cannot ignore that issue any longer. We've got a lot more to talk about as well on the economy, your bank deposits, as well as what's going on with, you know, Russia, Ukraine. We talked a little about that with Pompeo. A lot coming up. Support the work of the ACLJ. ACLJ.org. We'll start taking more of your calls when we come back as well. welcome back to Secular. We got to talk about economy as well, and I want to bring in Harry Hutchinson, because Harry, who is our director of policy, has a lot of experience in the economic policy and banking policy. And we saw again Secretary of Treasury Yellen say that she is committed to protecting bank deposits, but that more actions may be warranted. Do we know, Harry, what those actions are?
Well, no, not specifically, but we should also look at past history. And if we look at past history as a guide, whatever the Treasury does, whatever the Fed does, whatever the federal government does, is likely to exacerbate the financial and banking crisis. Keep in mind, the Federal Reserve knew in September of 2022 that a banking crisis was looming. Why? Because they were raising interest rates while the fixed income securities on the balance sheets of banks were basically declining in value. And so that has led to this crisis. In addition to which, Janet Yellen, serving as the head of the Financial Stability Council, which includes the Federal Reserve and I believe the FDIC, she announced in 2021 that the existential threat to the banking system was nothing less than climate change. So what we have is essentially a social justice climate change agenda, which has led, I would argue, directly to the failure of the Silicon Valley Bank, which then had a cascading effect leading to the loss of Signature Bank in New York.
Yeah, we gotta Logan, I want to go to the phones.
Yeah, I was about to say, same thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Brett, who's calling on line two. Brett, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering what your opinion would be. I haven't heard a lot of people talk about the broader look on. I know when President Obama was in office, there was a huge grab on the healthcare industry, which is a big part of the economy. And I notice now you've almost got the same actors in there, the far left, almost the same people. And now there seems to be a huge grab with the banking system. Maybe the Fed wants to take over the banks. And then they're also talking about this federalizing digital currency. I noticed Ted Cruz had come up with a bill to try to stop that. But to me, it sounds like they're working to, if they can get digital currency in, or if the Fed takes over the banks, then you can have all these people that want to withdraw their money and put it in their mattresses or their safes. They can't do that if they go to a digital currency and they phase out physical money. Then they have control over you totally on what you do, because you would have to rely on the banks. They would make you come feed from their trough. So that's kind of in layman's terms. Is anybody looking at the broader picture? Is there a bigger scheme going on by the far left to change the way that our country works?
Well, I think the caller raises a very good point. And if you look at the larger picture, you will find the World Economic Forum's footprints all over what is going on within the banking system. And this is a worldwide banking crisis. And Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum, has said we should not allow this crisis to go to waste. And so what he wants is to insist on government-issued digital currency. And then you will not have access to your own money unless you comply with a social credit system, which is already in place in China. So keep in mind that many of these moves have been in the planning stages for years, just like the World Economic Forum planned for a pandemic in 2019 and earlier. So keep in mind that at the end of the day, it's all about control. And I would argue that U.S. Treasury has contributed to bank failures throughout the United States. And they are now saying to the American people, we believe in capitalism for the middle class, but we believe in socialism for the rich. So we are bailing out uninsured deposits at SVB and at Signature Bank for very rich depositors, some of whom have had over $500 million in uninsured deposits. Why are the little people in Iowa, in Maine, and elsewhere bailing out all of these rich people? It makes no sense unless the objective at the end of the day is to push for some type of centralized control.
What do you think, Harry, is coming next on interest rates this week? Do you think we're going to see another hike?
Well, I would say two things. Number one, I believe a hike is likely, and it's already been baked into the market. But having said that, I'm not convinced that it will have much of an impact one way or another on this particular crisis, because the Fed has always been at the center of this crisis. Keep in mind, the Fed was raising rates starting last year, and they knew that the financial balance sheets for many of these banks was a bit unsteady, but they kept raising interest rates. But there's also another causal factor that we need to look at, and that is federal spending. The Biden administration has been on a rigorous spending binge for the last 2 years. That has done what? It has fueled inflation. And the consequence of inflation is higher interest rates. And higher interest rates lead to greater instability in the market and leads inevitably to bank failures.
I wanted to go to the phones at 1-800-684-3110. People have been holding on. Bill in Wyoming on line one. Hey, Bill.
Yeah, I guess I'm changing the subject. I hope I'm not doing something. But I was kind of wondering, you were mentioning the protests concerning President Trump's indictment. And I was wondering, instead of going to the streets, couldn't these people actually go to their phones and call up the representatives or something like that? Wouldn't that be better?
There's definitely a congressional move already in foot to bring Alvin Bragg, the DA in New York, in Manhattan, before the House Judiciary Committee and the Oversight Committee, because they do receive federal funds in these DA offices. So are these federal funds being misused to target individuals because of their politics, not because of their actual actions? Because everybody's talking about how novel and bizarre this is, a federal issue that every federal law enforcement agency passed on trying to bring against Donald Trump. And now a local DA, yeah, it's Manhattan, but a local DA in a state is going to try and make it a state felony. So he's trying to have it raised from a misdemeanor to a state felony, and it's a federal issue that even if an indictment came, could be thrown out by a court. So what I think, again, you can call your representatives. A lot of them, Logan, have already been speaking out very directly, whether they're Trump supporters or not, that this is absurd.
Yeah, I think so. You've seen a lot of people having to kind of get on the record and say that you know, it's going too far. And hey, we'll be taking calls coming up. There are a few lines open right now. So in the next segment of the broadcast, we try to pack as many calls and comments as we can into one segment. So now is your opportunity. If you are listening on radio, great call. If you are listening on the podcast, great. But if you are watching right now, you can also still call. I know you want to comment as well, but we like to hear your voice. Give me a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110, and you'll get your voice heard on the air in our upcoming segment. We're going to keep this conversation going, talk a bit about Jordan coming up, about kind of a new axis of evil that seems to be spinning a little out of control.
Yeah, so if you got questions about the new axis of evil, start getting those questions in now so we can get you in the final segment of the broadcast at 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Rachel in New York online for, hey, Rachel.
Yes, good afternoon. Hi. I'm calling just with a simple question. There's all this talk about this new stuff that's happening with Mr. Mayorkas. When is he going to finally be brought to justice?
What do you mean brought to justice? Do you mean impeached, like removed as a secretary?
Very frustrated because we're near the northern border. And it's just as bad as it is down in the southern border.
I think it's important for you to tell people. So you're at the northern border.
Right near the northern border, near Canada, yes.
And it's bad there.
Yes. Yeah.
What's happening there?
more and more immigrants are being seen around, and the crime rate is going up. Break-ins are going up. That what's called regarded to a squatting. Just what's going down at the northern border, and the crime rate is going up in neighborhoods where it doesn't usually happen.
Again, I appreciate you, Rachel, for calling in, because we do want to help hold Mayorkas accountable. Because the fact is, if our northern border starts feeling like our southern border, Logan, we're in really, really, really big trouble.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way. Maybe we're not putting enough attention to what's going on in the northern border. We kind of treat it very differently than we do our border with Mexico. But maybe it's time to start really digging in on what's happening. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Last segment coming up. We want to hear from you. We'll be right back.
By the way, folks, we're going to hit another topic today. There's so much to talk about today on the broadcast. I do want to remind people, a lot of people are expecting, is Donald Trump going to be indicted today? And there's a lot of the news was on that this morning, a lot of talk about it in the early morning news. And we can now report the grand jury in Manhattan, and we broke this in the last segment, but just to repeat it to everybody, because we want to keep you updated about what's actually going on, was not seated today. They did not come in, so they can't issue an indictment. So we at least know that Donald Trump will not be indicted today, Wednesday. We don't know if this has been because of an impact of testimony that was provided on that could have shed more light on what President Trump did and didn't know, and that attorney who went in and said, I think everything I've heard is wrong here. I was involved in some of this. I need to clear this up for the grand jury. And then all of a sudden, Logan, they canceled the grand jury today. It's very bizarre, like you said. Well, we have a podcast coming up today. I feel like we can get into that a little bit more on the Secular Brothers podcast.
Yeah, we definitely will. And if you want to listen to that, go to secularbrothers.com or find our Rumble channel. Just search for Secular Brothers. We broadcast that show as well. We do that around 4 p.m. Eastern time. We'll air that, so you can find it there, but it's obviously available as a podcast whenever you want. I will dive into that. Go to secularbrothers.com. But yeah, it's a weird move. It's a different play, and I think that we're seeing that kind of on the world stage happening as well. It's not just happening in our own politics. We talked a little bit with it with Mike Pompeo about the way China and Russia are now buddies and everything that's happening, Jordan.
Yeah, I want to go to Wes, because Wes, you've actually got a new piece up on these new buddies. As Logan said, a new axis of evil as the enemies of America unite. Tell people about this new axis of evil. And by the way, you can read this piece, folks, by Wes, a military expert, at ACLJ.org.
Yeah, what we're witnessing is Mark Twain famously said that history does not repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes. If you look back into the middle of the 20th century in the World War II era, you actually had a written agreement between Germany's Hitler and Italy's Benito Mussolini and the Empire of Japan, that they would join together to dominate and conquer the world. We actually see the beginnings of that right now with this new act. By the way, they were called the Axis powers. This is what I would term the Axis of Evil, the new Axis powers of China and Russia and Iran. And what is interesting about this, Jordan, is that at the end of World War II, when the United Nations was formed and the Security Council, that Security Council was supposed to be the bulwark against any nation ever trying to conquer another nation again. They were to be there as the guardrails for freedom and international borders and national sovereignty. We have two of the members of the Security Council of the UN who are actually violating the very thing they're supposed to be protecting. China is about to invade Taiwan. Russia is invading, Ukraine. And they've sort of used Iran as the linchpin in all of this. So we do indeed have this new axis powers and axis of evil. And that is between China, Russia, and Iran. And what I point out in my article on the website is that this is not just a mindset that they have agreed to. They have actually put this in writing. These three countries have written agreements. And what I found most startling is that part of what Russia and China said is that it is their intent to challenge the United States as a global power, challenge NATO as a cornerstone of international security, and challenge liberal democracy as a model for the world. That is their intentions in writing.
Logan, we know they believe that liberal democracy fails to the strongman style of leadership. You can use dictator, you can use king, you can use emperor, you can use whatever you want. But we saw it with Putin. Yeah, we saw it with Putin, where he had the constitution changed in Russia, the rules changed so that he could serve indefinitely as president. He had to go to prime minister for a little bit while they made those changes, and then he came back as president again. And they continue. And their selling point from Xi and Putin is, you guys come and go, you U.S. leaders. And then you got to ramp back up and figure out your policies. You have all these divided elections. Your country's not united. We remain.
Yeah, we remain steady.
We keep our people in line.
Yeah, it is an interesting, you know, point of view. Because you do kind of look at it from the other world leader point of view. If you're a dictator and you're like, I got to deal with a new president every 4 years of the other biggest country, the other biggest power, and I got to have a new relationship and start all over. Sure, it's a lot easier when it's China and Russia. You know, as long as these guys are alive, likely they're going to be in power, just because that's kind of how it works. It's easy for America to fall into that as well. Easy to fall back into our old ways, if you will, of wanting to keep the legacies going, keeping people that you're aware of. It's not always, you know, brand new faces that show up in politics. As we know, as you say, history seems to echo. That is the case in America too. We always have to be careful of elevating one family over elevating an entire country, so on and so on. But you're right. It is an interesting talking point that is kind of hard. If you're from a world like that, you can kind of see their point of view of going, oh yeah, why would we deal with America? We got to deal with potentially in another, year and a half, we're going to have to deal with potentially a different president, a different leader, a whole different group of people, a new secretary of state. And now we have to start all over.
They might throw all the agreements out the door. Yeah, right. So that's the argument they're making.
Russia and China team up together, and then who can stop us? I mean, in their theory.
And Wes, do you agree? This is the idea that they are directly challenging our system of government. They are putting a direct challenge to this system of government that we believe is worth dying for.
Yes, they have actually said it. And in some of these agreements, they've actually put part of this in writing. And that's the most astonishing thing. And yet just yesterday, John Kirby at the White House, when he asked, was this a new alliance, said, absolutely not. This is not a new alliance. This is not an axis of nations coming together to oppose our values. And yet that is exactly what's happened. It's like the White House is in denial. I have another article that was posted a few days ago about President Biden's mistaken view of the world. And this is an obvious part of that. China and Iran have signed a 25-year agreement with one another last year. Last week, China and Russia agreed wrote down treaties together, a pact, if you will, of what they call unlimited friendship. It is China who went in and renegotiated the relationship between Saudi Arabia and Iran. They are on the move, and it is their intent, and President Xi said this, that going forward in the future, that it will be Chinese culture and Chinese geopolitics that will be the model for the world, and those are his words.
Logan, I could see definitely getting involved in this on the Secular Brothers podcast as well, this long-term relationship now between the Chinese and the Russians as they make a play to be the world's leader, whether they need each other to do that or whether China can use some of Russia to do that, but China still claims. What we're seeing is this development of countries who are going to say, no, we're going to run the world, not the U.S. anymore. And we're a young country, so we have to fight back right now, Logan, to make sure we save it.
Yeah, absolutely. You can do that and be a part of the team here at the ACLJ. Easiest way and the best way is right now here as we wrap up this March matching challenge. Yeah, we only got about 10 days left in the month, not even. And you can be a part of it right now. All you need to do is go to ACLJ.org. Any donation made, whether that is $5 and $10 or $20. And again, that is the backbone of this organization. We aren't an organization run by, you know, $1 million donation or $100,000 donation. Sure, if you got it, we appreciate it. But we are run by the backbone of people who give $20 to $50 a month. And we really could use that right now. And right now it's effectively doubled. So go to ACLJ.org to make that donation and be a part of the ACLJ. It's very simple. All donations, you don't have to do anything special. Just go to ACLJ.org. And we're going to continue this conversation a lot more, even later today on our other show, the Secular Brothers Podcast. If you want a little bit more lighthearted, a little more casual version of this broadcast, we do another hour coming up on Secular Brothers. Go to secularbrothers.com. And again, ACLJ.org to make that donation. Talk to you later.